All right. That was fantastic. Turn to Acts 26. I'll read first in Matthew 11. Well, then we're going to go to Acts 26. In Matthew 11, Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart, and ye shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." That's what Jesus taught. My burden is light. My yoke is easy. So it's a fair question to ask, if Jesus taught that his yoke was easy, his burden was light, why is it the experience of some Christians that living the Christian life is hard? I mean, it's a fair question to ask, and when we notice things like this, we shouldn't just ignore them. We should, wait, hold on. He said that it's easy, that it's light. Why am I experiencing a burden that's hard, that's heavy? What's going on here? I mean, it's fair to ask, okay, you say, Jesus taught that marriage was God's plan in the beginning, and he preached against divorce, and many say, okay, I'm going to follow Jesus, and I'll stay married, but like, well, this marriage thing seems hard. And they run into difficulties and say, this isn't easy, this is hard. And of course, Jesus taught that children were a blessing from the Lord, and suffer little children to come unto me and forbid, of such is the kingdom of heaven. And yet, raising kids sometimes, if you're a parent, you'll admit sometimes my experience is that it seems raising kids for the Lord nowadays is hard and not easy. And Jesus said, I will build my church, and church is his plan, and it's wonderful, and it's supposed to be his grace and his power. And I think if you talk to any pastor that's been a pastor for any length of time, that you kind of ask, well, sometimes it doesn't seem that easy. Many pastors struggle. We're very blessed to have a faithful pastor. That's many pastors don't stay pastor for more than 1 or 2 years. Because it seems so hard. Things aren't going right in the church, and people, they're trying to teach people to follow Jesus, and then there's bickering and there's complaint. Why is it hard? I thought Jesus said, my yoke is easy. What's going on? In fact, Jesus himself taught, when it comes to living a righteous, holy Christian life, when he taught when you're living righteously, he says, unless you're your righteousness should exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. And boy, the scribes and the Pharisees worked hard at being righteous. The Pharisees, they every possible law and rule, every little thing they could do to work harder, to be more righteous, if there was more effort that could be put into it, then you're a sinner if you don't put that effort in. And they put a huge burden on people's shoulders. And then Jesus says, your righteousness should be more than that. But then Jesus says, my yoke is easy. So we want to understand this, and I think the best example we have in the Bible is a man who experienced a very hard time trying to live righteously. This is a man who his entire life wanted to live following God's principles, following the Bible. He wanted to have a righteous life. He wanted people to be able to look at his life and say, there's a man who's doing it the right way, that's doing it God's way, that's following the rules and living by the book. And you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who didn't work this, that you're hard-pressed to find anyone that worked harder than this man at living a righteous life. Of living with so much zeal, with so much enthusiasm, every little effort he could put into living righteously, he put into living righteously. And then he found that it was hard. And it seemed the more he worked, the harder it got. Until one day, Jesus explained to him why it was hard. And that's found in I'll read here, and it's found three places in the Bible, but I'll read in Acts 26, verse 14. And this man, of course, is a man named Saul of Tarsus, a man who spent his whole life trying to live righteously. Until one day, Jesus speaking to him says this, "And then when they were fallen to the earth, I heard a voice speaking unto me and saying in the Hebrew tongue, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks." It is hard for thee, and in that moment, after a lifetime of working hard to live a righteous life, working hard to be a good man of God, working hard to follow the Bible and live for God, and it being so impossibly hard, with just one simple idiom, Jesus explained why it's hard. Simple illustration, which was obvious. It was probably a common figure of speech in those times. They would have animals that would perhaps pull a cart or put a burden on that animal and walk down the road. And animals sometimes got stubborn, especially donkeys and things that are notorious for it. And they had a way of getting a stubborn animal that didn't want to comply. An animal perhaps that wanted to go the wrong way when they needed to go that way would not go or would just stand immovable. Of course, the way is with a prod or a goad. It's just a sharpened stick. And this word pricks just means that, sharpened stick. And nowadays, of course, they're more sophisticated. They have cattle prods with electrical current in them and stuff. But it was just a sharpened stick back then, and you would just poke the animal to motivate it to move when it's being stubborn. Now a good owner of the animal doesn't want to harm their animal and just wants to get them to go where they need to go. Perhaps they're in a place where they're going to starve and I'm trying to get them to the place where there's food for them. You know, we're doing good and not evil to this animal, but they're stubborn and so here's the stick with the sharp point, and let's get that animal moving. And rather than yielding and going in the direction they're being prodded to go, the master wouldn't want to harm the animal. They're just going to poke just enough so that they can feel it. But some harm can be done if the animal in stubbornness decides, I'm going to kick back. And here's the master poking with a stick, and rather than moving away from the sharp pointy stick, you decide, I'm going to poke. I'm going to kick at the sharp pointy stick. Then what was just a light poke might be strong enough to pierce skin. That animal might get some serious damage done to them by kicking against the pricks. You see this simple word picture of a man holding a sharp stick and an animal kicking back against that stick and stabbing themselves against the sharp pointy stick. And it's a simple idiom referring to how we can, in stubbornness, do damage to ourselves. We can make the situation harder because we're not yielding, because of rebellion, because of... And so let's look at this. We see here's Paul. You say, then we read this, and here's the biggest problem I have so many times reading this and not learning from it what I should have learned, and that's because Paul was an unsaved man, and this is the moment when he starts believing in Jesus. And so the thing is, unlike him at this point, I trusted in Jesus when I was young. I was like 4.5 years old when I trusted Christ as my Savior. So every time I've read this passage, it didn't apply to me, or so I thought. Well, I came here, and here's Paul. Okay, yeah, he finally, that stubborn man won't get saved, and now finally he yields and gets saved. Boy, if I wasn't saved, I'd want to listen to that lesson. I don't want to kick. And so we think about, oh, I don't want to kick against the prick. So that's that person that God is trying to get to trust in Christ, and they're not getting saved. And so we'll apply it to our uncle who's not saved. We'll apply it to our stubborn neighbor who won't come to church. And boy, I hope they stop kicking against the pricks. But then we need to stop and actually look at the story. When exactly is he kicking against the pricks? Well, I mean, well, is he doing it there on the road to Damascus when he sees this light from heaven? I mean, every time the story is told, it's pretty straightforward. He sees the light. He hears the voice. Who art thou? I'm Christ. What do you want me to do? And he does it. There's no stubborn defiance anywhere there. There's a story about Jesus is using the illustration of someone making their life miserable through enduring stubborn defiance. And yet the story of Saul's conversion is that of immediate acceptance and yielding. Who art thou? Christ. What do you want me to do? It's that straightforward. It was And by the way, there's nothing hard there. There's absolutely nothing hard about what he did that day. Who art thou? I'm Christ whom thou persecutest. What do you want me to do? Go to the town and ask for this street. And you don't have to find the address. You're blind, so you're not going to do it anyway. In fact, he doesn't even have to figure out how to get to the town. People are going to lead him there. All he says is, who art thou? What do I do? That was easy. So where's the hard part? I submit to you that the hard part was everything that led up to that moment. This is not a story of a difficult conversion, but it's a story of a difficult life trying to please God. And the fact of the matter is, as much as I can say, yes, this story definitely applies to someone that's not saved, and if you're here tonight and you've been coming to church, I mean, I think everyone, like we said, no one's brand new tonight, but you've been coming to church, and yet you know in your heart you're not saved, and God has been pricking on you to trust Christ for salvation, by all means, you know, come. In fact, don't even wait till the end. Go find a pastor right now. Just deal with it this second. I mean, don't wait till the end of the sermon. If you're not saved tonight, get saved. But we look at him making his life hard and kicking against the pricks, and I don't think this is something we should just apply to someone who's resisting coming to Christ in salvation. He's living an entire life trying to please God. And the fact of the matter is, those of us that have been saved can make the same mistakes he's been making and kick against the pricks all the same. Perhaps not in the area of trying to get saved, but of trying to live for God, we can do it in our own strength the same way he did. So let's go back. Let's not go the rest of the story here. Let's move back, and I'm going to walk through quickly five things that he did that were hard. Four or five things that make living for God super hard, very hard. So number one, it's hard to establish my own righteousness. I want to live for God. I want to live the right life. I want my family to be a Christian family. So what do I need to do? I need to figure out what it is I need to do different. I got to start getting some good stuff in my life. I need to make some good decisions. I need to fix the things I've been doing wrong. I need to get it right. I need to make myself righteous. That's hard. I need to make my family righteous. I want to be the kind of family that we don't drink, we don't cuss, we aren't mean to people. We're following the law. We're doing right, and I don't want to have my family doing all by the book. All right, that is hard. That's hard. And yet, all his life, from the time when he was a little child, Saul of Tarsus determined, I'm going to be a good Jew. I'm going to follow all the rules in the Bible. I'm going to establish my own righteousness. I am going to be a righteous person. I'm going to earn favor with God. I'm going to be of value. I'm going to give value to my life by being righteous, and I'm going to establish it myself. I'm going to find the areas where I need to be righteous. I'm going to, whatever it takes, however hard it is, I'm going to be righteous. So Paul was talking about this, and when he's years later, the church at Philippi. And then later to the book of Romans. See this Paul, if we look at a little of his backstory, in Philippians 3, he talks about his backstory. He says, circumcised the eighth day of the stock of Israel. This is Paul talking about himself. So he's perfectly, as a child, his parents perfectly follow the law with him. So he's perfectly, he meets all the criteria of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews, touching the law of Pharisee. I mean, I'm the most righteous of following the law. Concerning zeal, persecuting the church. You can't get more enthusiastic for Judaism than persecuting Christians. Touching the righteousness which is in the law, blameless. He worked hard at this thing. You know how much work? You know how much work it is to be able to make a claim like that? There were people like me. Now, Jesus pointed out that it was pure hypocrisy, and those making such claims had forgotten the bigger, weightier things of the law. But there were people that made these claims according to what they said it entailed to follow the law, the outward following these rules. He had followed the rules all his life. Remember the man that came to Jesus and says, all these have I kept from my youth up? That's a big brag. I've never wanted, I mean, yes, okay, I've never murdered someone. God, at Ten Commandments, we're doing great now. I've never murdered someone. I've never robbed a bank. But what he's saying is I never stole cookies from my mom. I never backtalked my mom, ever. That's a big brag. That takes a lot of work. That is hard. Look, he's saying, I always have kept. That means every Sabbath day he kept. There's never a day where he says, forget this, I'm gonna go out, because otherwise he wouldn't have made that brag. That means he took the day. There wasn't a set. Every single Saturday he was in synagogue. That was probably true of that man that came to Jesus. That was probably true of Saul of Tarsus. No doubt there was not a single day, a single week in Saul's life from when he was a child that he wasn't there in synagogue. You know, some of them brag, I've been in church every single day the doors were opened for the last 5 years, 10 years, all my life, never missed a Sunday. That would be quite the brag. And he could do it without lying. That's a lot of work. That's hard. Thinking, doing all of that, hoping it would establish his righteousness. But the more he did it, the more he realized he was not righteous. And that his heart was desperately wicked. And he had as much covetousness and sin, and it just got harder. And the more he tried to, maybe if I follow a few more rules, maybe if I add rules on top of those rules and more rules on top of those rules and I keep all of them, then I'll be so righteous. And it didn't work. And here's the thing. It wasn't like on the road to Damascus he realized that wasn't working. He knew that was not working all along. The person that, people might put on the appearance of, yes, I'm doing well, but on the inside they're not and they are miserable. Oh, I'm such a good Christian. I've got all my ducks in a row. And you might look sharp to everyone else, but you're not fooling yourself, and you're not fooling God. And it's frustrating, thinking, I thought I did everything. I'm trying to do everything. Other people think I'm such a good Christian. But you know you've not established any righteousness at all. You're nowhere close. This is how he explains it in Romans chapter 10. Again, he's saying this basically from experience, right? He says, he's talking about the Jews that are still not Christians, and he says, I've been there, so look, let me bear them record. Look, I know what it's like, okay? Let me tell you what it's like from their perspective. I'm not going to make fun of them. He's not going to sit there and mock all those silly Jews following all their silly rules. He's been there, and he says, look at this. I bear them record that they have a zeal of God, okay? They genuinely really want to work hard to please God. It's a real zeal. They have this zeal, but it's not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and going about to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. On that day, Jesus spoke to him and he realized, establishing my own righteousness is hard, but submitting to his righteousness is easy. How much work does it take for me to have Jesus forgive my sins? It's his righteousness put on my account. That's not some huge labor I have to do. That's him. It was hard for Jesus, but he did it. I've just got to submit to it. I don't got to go and establish righteousness. I don't need to work hard to build things in my... Christ already is working in my... I just got to submit to it. I got to stop fighting against Christ building righteousness in me. He's counted me righteousness. He died on the cross. So that's why Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. I am meek and lowly at heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. Fighting to establish his own righteousness that day, Saul found rest. Number two, it's hard to buy my own security. To buy my own security. See, Saul wasn't just that he was a very religious man. He was a very wealthy man. He came from a very well-to-do family. Throughout the Roman magistrates are amazed at him that his father was wealthy enough to basically own Roman citizenship. His father there in Tarsus was very wealthy enough that he bought this high status in life. So he was born with this enormous privilege of being a Roman citizen. So much so the guards that were arresting him were envious of him that he had this status. He grew up, and he explains, he tells his story, right? He talks about, as he goes, he says, in Acts 22, he's telling the story here. Back, jump up at verse 3, he tells the story. He says, I am verily a man, which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city of Cilicia, right? As I'm not from some poor town, or I'm a very wealthy city. I'm a wealthy, I mean, this is a wealthy city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel. So not only was his family well enough that he was had status, but they were able to afford to send him off to go to train his entire life with Gamaliel to be a Pharisee, to be a religious leader there of the Jews, even though, in other words, he didn't have to learn a trade to work a job. You see what I'm saying? Like a normal family back then, they had a son, he needs to be learning how to, you know, do carpentry or raise sheep or whatever it is to make food for the family. This family was well off enough they could just send him off to Pharisee school his whole childhood, right? That is a wealthy, privileged family, okay? There's no doubt about it, he had this wealth. And just like so many we see, like the rich young man that comes to Jesus, that was Saul was just like that one. It's another Pharisee, a very similar boy. In fact, it might have been the same, we don't know. Here's a young man just like Saul. He has this wealth, and the thought was, well, if I have this wealth, I have enough of this. I don't have to worry about the stuff that these poor people have to worry about, and I have security. When you think about it, when we obsess over gaining possessions, over having wealth, or over making money, what we're trying to do is buy security. That's what we want. If we have enough money in the bank, I don't have to worry about, you know, getting in a car accident because it'll be, you know, the car will be fixed. You know, I have enough money to buy a new one. I don't have to worry about how I got enough money to buy a new house. If I have enough money, I have security. I don't have to worry about where my next meal's coming from. I've got money in the bank. I've got savings. I've got stockpiles of food in my pantry. I'm good to go. And when we obsess over wealth, over material goods, we are trying to buy security. And you know what? That's hard. It is so hard in his whole life, thinking, I've got enough, I'm well off, I've got riches, I don't have to worry about stuff, I don't have to pray anymore, give me this daily my daily bread, I've got plenty. That's hard. You can be all wealthy, you say, okay, I've got enough for 2 months rent in the bank, and I've got all my debts paid off, and I got this savings account, and this 401k, and I got this insurance policy, and all that, and as many people can attest, that can all be gone in a split second. You know, something happens and it's gone instantly. And you know that. And so you get up to where, okay, I got this much savings and I've got all my ducks in a row. And they're like, oh man, but what if this happens? I better have more. Oh, what if this happens? I better have a better house. I better have a nicer house. You'll never get there. You can spend all the money in the world and you cannot buy security. It's hard. And so here he is, he's kicking up against the pricks, he's through his stubbornness, thinking, no, I need to be able to afford my own security, I need to have enough to get ahead in life. And what we easily find ourselves doing is making it more difficult. It's hard to buy my own security, it's easy to trust the Father, it's easy. Jesus gave the illustration, a little flower in the field. It doesn't do any work providing nice clothes for itself, but it looks beautiful. Be like the flower. It's not trying to provide for its own. It gives the other illustration. Jesus gives illustrations of a child. Be like a little child. My kids didn't worry what fancy clothes they're going to put on this morning. Mom just got them clothes and here you go. It's easy being a kid. It's really easy. What's for breakfast? Whatever mommy makes. There's no worries about where breakfast is coming from. There's no worry about what I'm going to wear. You know, mommy just has to give us, can you at least put it on? I got you clothes. Can you at least put it on? Oh, it's so difficult. Oh, I have to put on my shoe. And, oh, okay, you know, I've got a really nice coat. Really, I got to put it on, you know. Oh, whoa, that's such a hard life. It's easy. And as children of God, our life's meant to be easy. Why are we stressing it? Why are we making it hard by thinking I need to buy my own security? Number three. It's hard to resist conviction. We look at this in Saul's life. Where was the pricks really starting to really kick against the pricks? And it's a particular sermon in Acts chapter 7. A man named Stephen, we know the story. He's preaching, And Saul of Tarsus is there. And we know how it ends. At the end of the sermon, Saul and the other guy and his buddies, they stone him to death. But you notice it's one of the longest sermons recorded in the Bible with detail, vivid description of exactly what Stephen said. Now, here's the thing. Stephen didn't write it in the Bible. He was dead. The people that were there listening to the sermon, most of them were not Christians. They hated Christians. So how did that huge, long sermon get into the Bible? Well, it's written by Luke in the book of Acts, and we know when and where Acts was written, and it was written while Paul was in house arrest. In other words, while they were there in Rome, Luke writes this with Saul of Tarsus in the room with him. How do we have such a detailed, word for word? This was in the midst of a trial to try to put someone to death. Like, there's an angry mob, and he's pulled up there, and he gives this sermon in his defense, and then he's stoned to death. It's not like an official, there was no recording. There's no one to hit record on the CD. It wasn't live streamed. There was no one sitting there taking notes, writing down word for word what was in the sermon. How do we have that huge, long sermon word for word? I submit to you because Saul of Tarsus was there hearing that sermon. And as much as he tried the rest of his life, he could never forget one word of it. God was pricking his conscience. It's not hard to hear someone preach a strong message against you. It's easy. Oh man, I'm wrong. Fix it. That was not hard. But boy, to resist conviction, that's hard. To stand in front of have a preacher that preaches about the stuff that you're doing wrong, and to say, no, I'm not going to find some excuse why I don't want to listen. To not come down to the altar and get it right, that's hard. That is sweating bullets hard. And that's what Saul went through. He heard this, and word for word, these were the words that he could not forget. He couldn't get these out of his mind. As he was sitting there listening to Stephen, and Stephen told him this, "Ye stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, ye do always resist the Holy Ghost. As your fathers did, so do ye." Oh, man. No, I'm more righteous than those guys that killed the prophets. Really? There's conviction there. Oh, look at their response. How did they resist? Well, it was so hard they had to gnash their teeth. Look what it says here. It says, "And after these things, they were cut to the heart and gnashed at him with their teeth." That was tough conviction. It was I submit to you, the whole effort of going out and stoning someone to death was because of them trying to find some way to deal. I can't take it any longer. This is too hard to hear preaching from God's word and to resist what's being said. I'll just stone him to death. That'll solve the problem. He didn't. He was convicted by that, and he kept kicking against the pricks. It is not hard to yield to God. You know how difficult it is to stand up, walk a few feet forward, and kneel here and pray? Easy. Easy. It's not hard being in a church that has a pastor that's going to preach conviction from God's word. But it is if you're trying to resist it. Oh, that's hard. People can't take that for long. Pretty soon they're finding another church to go to. Oh, this Baptist church is just, that preaching is so hard. It's so heavy. It's only hard if you're resisting. If you're kicking against the pricks, number four, it's hard to earn recognition from men. That's really hard. See, I'm trying to live a good Christian life. I'm doing everything right. Look at these great decisions I've made. I've been in church, and I'm working hard, and no one recognizes me. I've been coming to church all these years, and pastors never asked me to sing a solo, and no one's asked me to teach a Sunday school class. Why can't I get some recognition? I've worked so hard to live. Listen, if you try to live a good Christian life and be recognized for it by people, here's the problem with getting recognized by people. The reason why you want to get recognized is by nature you're selfish and you care about you. Here's the problem. The people you're trying to get to recognize you have the same nature. and they're selfish and care about them. The world knows this. Anyone in politics knows this. You're only going to get recognition from someone if you're of value to them, right? The way to get publicity on the news is if they report what they say, it's going to get them more ratings, okay? So if it's going to help the news, that's the only reason. They don't care otherwise. Some political party is going to support you if they think you're going to buy them a few more votes. You're going to spend your whole life getting recognized by people who are spending their whole life trying to get recognition for themselves. That's a losing proposition. That's hard. That is really hard. That is what toil. There's no guarantee you could be the best person. Here's the fact of the matter is, many of the greatest, most wonderful people in history are not in the history books. And the history books are full of the stories of psychopaths. There really is. Of people who all they wanted is power and wealth for themselves. Greedy, self-serving psychopaths fill up the history books, and they're not the most important people in history. So then how did they get in there? Because the guys that wrote the history books were psychopaths, and they only cared about themselves. And, if I put this person in the book, then that makes my cause look good, and I convince people of the whatever message I want to do. And that's how it is. Trying to get yourself in the history books, what a waste of time. What a toil. What a challenge. And here Saul of Tarsus worked so hard hoping to get recognized, and it wasn't happening. So he says, okay, how can I get more recognized by the religious leaders and stuff? I'm just this nobody. I know if I go and I stone some Christians to death and I start praying, if I just go totally wild on this whole zeal thing, then they'll start recognizing me. But it wasn't working, and he was kicking against the pricks. And the harder he worked to try to live this better life, hoping he'd be recognized as the best Jew ever, the more people tried to get themselves recognized as the best Jew ever. Don't pay attention to him. In fact, the more successful he was, forget that Saul guy. Look, I'm the man over here. Look, I'll stone a few more Christians, right? What a waste. What a wasted effort trying to get man to recognize me. It's hard to earn recognition from men. Listen, it's easy to be known by God. The all-knowing God doesn't miss a thing. That's easy. And he wants a relationship with you, and he wants to know you as a child. And he cares about you regardless of your performance. You can spend all day trying to get people to recognize you when there's a God Almighty who knows you. And oh, he kicked against the pricks. He kicked against the bricks trying to get, they won't recognize me. They won't recognize me. Maybe if I go up to Damascus and I arrest a bunch of Christians and come back, then the elders will finally applaud me and they'll really recognize me. But on his way, notice it says in his own tongue. Everyone else he had to talk to, Greek or Roman, these other languages. It's in the Hebrew language. Jesus spoke his language and called his name. Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It was easy for him to be known of God. God already knew his name. He's so worried that, like, does the high priest know my name? Does the governor know my name? You know, am I a big... God already knew his name. Why make it so hard? Why struggle so much? Oh, I just can't get any recognition. I'm trying to live a good Christian life. Why? You're doing that. That's hard. God already knows you. It's easy. And finally, it's hard to compel others to do what you want. You're trying to live for right. For some reason, every time in all of history, someone will say, I want to live a righteous life. An honorable life. I'm going to live good. There seems to be somehow this deep-rooted thing that part of that is I need to tell everyone else what to do. I don't know why that is, but that was indeed the instinct for all of the Pharisees, including Saul of Tarsus. It wasn't enough that he lived a life that pleased God. He needed to make sure everyone else was in line. and he needed to get them to do what he knew was the right thing to do. It's very hard to compel people to do what you want. Boy, it's hard as a parent, getting your kids to do everything you want them to do. That's hard. It's hard as a pastor, getting everyone to do what I want them to do. Wise pastors don't try. They just know that, let's see if I can get a few people to do what God wants them to do and not worry so much about what I want them to do. But that's hard. And boy, here's Saul. Look what he says. I'm going to get out there. And here's these non-compliant Christians. They weren't called Christians yet. You know, disciples of Jesus of Nazareth, right? And look at them. They're not complying with what I think righteousness is. I've got to get them. I'm going to persecute them. I'm going to do whatever. Stone that one to death. Put that one in jail. As if that zeal, and the more he tried, the harder it got. It's actually fun reading through those first chapters of Acts and seeing everything he did to try to suppress these Christians, and every time how the Christians just exploded. I mean, you read it, it's great. And Saul was consenting unto his death. This is right after Stephen was stoned, right? And at that time, there was a great persecution against the church, which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered abroad throughout all the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. And devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made a great lamentation over him. All right, Saul pats himself on the back. This is working great. I'm suppressing those Christians. Next verse. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering into every house, hailing men and women, committing them to prison. Therefore, they that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. Didn't work so well. All he did was to turn a bunch of Christians that were just content to sit in the church in Jerusalem and turn them into preachers and evangelists. He scattered them all, and they went everywhere preaching. And they went everywhere starting churches. And he's saying, God, this will stamp them out, and they scatter and multiply. Oh, it's frustrating. If you're trying to live your life getting other people to live the way you want them to live, expect a lifetime of utter frustration. However hard it is now, it's only going to get harder. If it's your life's calling to make sure every other Christian is in line, and every other Christian is behaving the way you think they should, and treating each other the way you think they should be treated, and dressing the way you think they... Oh boy, you're in for a hard time of it. You're kicking against the pricks. You're sitting there saying, no, it needs to be my way, and you're kicking against the pointy sticks, stabbing into your feet. You know what, it's very hard to compel others to follow you. It's easy to follow the shepherd. It's easy. Christian life is not hard. It's really hard to get other people to do what you want them to do. It's really hard, really easy to just follow Jesus. Now you say, well, it was easy for Saul once he heard. He just didn't know, and it wasn't until that day that he realized that he was making a mistake. I submit to you, he knew he was in the wrong long before that. Because remember, this is that Stephen is stoned in chapter 8. If you jump back to chapter 5. Now, remember, a little tiny detail here, right? If you recall, you have a man named Gamaliel. I read that a second ago. That he was the one that trained Saul of Tarsus from a child. So he was his Sunday school class teacher, preacher, all the way through. Trained him from a child up to be a preacher. This is his personal mentor and teacher, was this man. He says they grew up in the feet of Gamaliel, but you go back in Acts, and they're persecuting the Christians, or they're getting ready to, and they're all standing around deciding. Remember, little old Saul of Tarsus, he hasn't made a name for himself. He's just but his instructor, his teacher, his master, oh, he was well known. He was one of the most well known. And he stands up and he says, don't persecute the Christians. You read it. He gives the greatest, actually, where is the basis for this idea of religious liberty or something? The greatest essay on religious liberty is said by Gamaliel there. He gets up and says, listen, you don't need to persecute people that aren't teaching, that believing the right thing, because either they're not of God and God will deal with them, or they are of God and watch out, or we'll be fighting, we'll find ourselves to be fighting against God. He warns Saul. He tells Saul. This is Saul's teacher. Okay, this isn't just any random rabbi. This is his rabbi. This is his teacher. It seems like he clearly says he didn't grow up in Tarsus with his parents. He grew up in Jerusalem with Gamaliel. Gamaliel was more of a father to Saul than his own father, than his birth father. Okay, this is the man that raised him. This is the man that taught him the word of God. And that man says, Saul, don't kill Christians. And Saul says, I know better than you, old man. I'm going to do it. Look, you're not with the times. The new thing to show, I have more zeal than you. Look at this. I'm going to one-up even Gamaliel. He's too cowardly to kill Christians. I'll kill Christians. Look at how much zeal and the warning. So clear. He says, at least happily you find yourself to fight against God. And that day, he hears the voice of God, and he realizes his teacher was right all along. He found out he's fighting against God. In other words, he was warned specifically about kicking against the pricks by his teacher. It would have been so easy for him to say, okay. He could have stopped kicking against the pricks long before that, and he knew that he should have. He stubbornly made it hard. It was not an instantaneous up. He was just totally in good faith. Arrived, oh, okay, I'll get saved. No, he had been fighting against the conviction of God for years, knowing that he can't establish his own righteousness, knowing his wealth isn't enough to give him security, knowing that he's nothing, he can't earn the favor of man, knowing he can't get others to do what he says. But it's easy to follow the shepherd. We kind of seem to think we're like Saul, like maybe we're supposed to be a sheepdog. You know, we see some sheep not following the master. We're barking and growling, and that's our job. No. My job is to be a sheep, not a sheepdog. My job is to hear the voice of the master and follow. That's it. It's not my job to make everyone else comply. It's not my job to persecute those that aren't doing right. I'm a sheep. I have an easy job. Okay, the shepherd has a hard job. The sheep has an easy job. Stop trying to do a harder job than you've been asked to do. You know how complicated it was for the other apostles to get saved? All right, like Matthew 4. And he said unto them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Are you ready for this? Big, complicated procedure they went through here, you know. They did all fasting for months, and they worked. No. And they straightway left their nets and followed him. That's how complicated it is to be an apostle. Super complicated, right? Biggest job in Christianity, right? One of the 12 apostles. Here's a couple of them. I'm going to choose you to be the 12 apostles. Follow me. Okay. That's it. Wait, what else do you have to do to become an apostle? You just follow him. No. You have to build a resume, you know, go to school, do all this training, memorize the Bible, learn 6 languages. No. Actually, Peter didn't know do any of those things. Look, Saul of Tarsus, his whole life working so hard. Right at the from a child, learning the Bible, learning the scriptures, memorizing the Bible, working at the field of Gamaliel. I mean, he worked so hard to be qualified to be a rabbi. And Peter, this fisherman, fishing, follow me. Takes net, drops the net, follows the rabbi. That's it. It involved him letting go of his net and walking in the direction that Jesus was walking. That's the long and the short of how he became an apostle. Now, the apostle Paul, it was just as easy. All the hard stuff was him kicking against the pricks, but when it came down to it, Saul, who art thou? I'm Christ. What do? Just go. Go to this town. Someone will pray for you. You'll get your eyesight back. Just follow me. You know what it took? What do? That was it. That was it. It wasn't complicated. It wasn't difficult. He didn't have to get anyone else to do anything. He didn't have to establish his own righteousness. He didn't have to be wealthy. He didn't have to solve all his problems. He didn't have to get all his ducks in a row. Jesus said, follow. And he followed. And it turned out living for God was really easy all along. Jesus was right when he said, "My yoke is easy. My burden is light." You say, "But wait, I work so hard trying to live the Christian life. Whose yoke do you have on your shoulders?" It's not his. His is light. If yours is heavy, you've gotten the wrong yoke on your shoulders. If it's hard carrying that burden, you're carrying the wrong burden. It's not the one Jesus gave you. Because his is light. His is easy. In fact, if I find my burden that heavy, my yoke that hard, I got to stop and ask myself, wait a minute. Am I kicking against the pricks? Right? It's the same allegory, that of an animal pulling. And it's easy for that animal to pull that wagon. There's very little on the wagon. It's easy. It's well within the means, and it's a piece of cake. But if he sits there stubbornly, pretty soon here comes the prick. And he can make it even worse by kicking that prick. And all he's got to do is go forward. It's not hard at all. The Christian life is easy. Saul of Tarsus found a way to make it really hard. And many of us easily can fall into the same trap.